The Vintage Gamer, Episode 17, Empire Builder.
This show is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, gbncom.com.
Welcome to The Vintage Gamer, the podcast that seeks out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. The Vintage Gamer is brought to you courtesy of the internet, bringing you naked pictures and uncivil discourse since 1990. And through these well-funded enterprises, this show is available via RSS or direct download at www.thevintagegamer.net. Well, it has been a while, hasn't it? I'm not really sure where all the time went. My original plan for the next show was to do an interview when I was in Boston. Now, that was at the beginning of the month, and I was going to put that up soon after. But that plan fell through, and I guess kind of a week or two just slipped by. However, I have put some of that time to good use, as far as this show is concerned. I actually relaxed quite a bit. I got in a game of Warp War with a listener. Thank you, Patrick. That was a lot of fun, and we need to play again soon. So there will be a show on that sometime. And I've been playing a lot of Pente lately, so that will be forthcoming as well. Actually, I'm thinking probably next time. And of course, there's that interview that never happened. Plus, I've got some other things that have been percolating on the back burner as well. So, I don't know, maybe it was best I took some time off, kind of recharge my batteries. In some sense, this show, I guess you could think of it as the beginning of the second season of The Vintage Gamer. And the first season was just me, just sitting in this room here, talking to myself, and I guess talking to you as well. And there will be a fair amount of that to come. But I'm going to start bringing in some other people as well, just to bring some new energy to the show. Either we'll discuss a game, or, as I mentioned, maybe I'll actually do some interviews. And maybe I'll do a little bit of both. One other thing I'm going to try to do in forthcoming shows is not review a game unless I'm certain I know it pretty well. There were a couple of shows that I did in the first 16 that were, well, shall I say, kind of rushed out the door. No one, and well, no one as far as I know, seemed to mind that too much, but I know that I could have done a better job if I had prepared just a little bit more. So I'm going to try to prevent that from happening again. This may mean that I do take my time getting to certain games, and some of those games are games that people really want me to talk about. But I'd rather have a better result than trying to cram a show out the door. And certainly, regularity is not one of my priorities for getting shows out. And no one seems to have complained about that. But enough blathering on. Let's get to the show here. This week, I am actually joined by someone in the Vintage Gamer Studios. Someone who probably needs no introduction to many of you. So we'll get to the game and this mystery guest right after this.
Hi, this is Mer Lafferty from Geek Fu Action Grip, and I am luckier than every single one of you because I get to play games with Jim from The Vintage Gamer.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of The Vintage Gamer. I'm Jim Van Verth, and I'm here with my wife, Mer Lafferty. You might know Mer of Geek Fu Action Grip, I Should Be Writing, and now Pseudopod.
Pseudopod. Yes. Hi there.
Yeah, say hi to the folks at home. Or...
Hi, folks at home.
So we are going to do a, I don't want to say couple cast.
This is our first couple cast.
Isn't it cute? We're going to talk about the Empire Builder series of games, even though we don't actually own Empire Builder.
Nope.
But we'll get to that in a little bit. Well, let me start off by talking about a little bit of history about Empire Builder. Empire Builder was designed by Darwin Bromley, who was the owner of Mayfair Games back in 1980 when it was first published, and Bill Fawcett. And as I understand it, it was originally based on another game, which I think was Rails Across the Rockies. I'm sorry, Rails Through the Rockies. I'm not entirely sure if that's the correct game. In any case, Darwin Bromley was a huge railroad game fan and wanted to create his own railroad game, and Empire Builder was it. Were you there when Stackpole was talking about this?
I don't know. It sounds like it might be familiar, but I don't remember any details from it. Keep talking.
Okay, well, he talked about how Darwin Bromley has this warehouse full of railroad games.
Yes, I remember the warehouse of railroad games. Okay.
So, Bromley wanted his own railroad game to go, well, in this warehouse.
Because then it would stand out.
Well, there you go. The idea of the game is, well, it's common to many of the railroad games, is that each player is building a railroad network across, in this case, the United States, with a little bit of Canada. And you're delivering commodities and making money and building your rail empire. And you use the money to build more railroad, and eventually you get to a point where you have connections to the right number of cities, which I guess major cities, which in this case is 5 most of the time, and a certain amount of money, which is usually $25 million, or euros, or whatever.
250.
Did I say 200?
You said 25.
250. See, this is why she's here, to correct me.
Hey, I did a bunch of research this afternoon. Our living room was full of rail games. Our daughter was thrilled.
Now, the original board, as I said, is the U.S. with a bit of Canada. And on top of that, they threw on this grid of points, which is sort of a triangular-shaped grid. And you build your rail network, and this is my favorite part of the game, by drawing on the board.
This is how he sold the game to me. Many, 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 many years ago. You know, it was like, yeah, there's trains, but you get to draw on the board with crayons. It's awesome.
Well?
Well, it worked. I played it. I liked it.
Yeah. Okay.
Crayons.
So we were at crayons.
We were at crayons. You had me at crayons.
So you draw from dot to dot, and each dot is a different cost. You draw into the dot and pay the cost to get in there. So most dots are just flat land. And they cost $1 million, or whatever the currency of the game is. Mountains are represented by a triangle, and they cost $2 million. And then there are small cities and large cities, sorry, medium cities, which are a circle and a square, and they cost $3 million. And I think it's only 2 players can move into, can build into a small city, and 3 can build into a medium city. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Don't forget the Alpines.
Well, that's we're going to get to that.
Oh, sorry.
When we get to Euro Rails.
Oh, no, of course there are no Alps.
Yeah, there are no Alps.
No Rockies?
No Rockies in Empire Builder. And then there are the major cities, which take up 7 dots, which are just basically a big red hex. And they actually cost 5 to build into, but you can build out of 2 major cities on your turn basically for free. It just costs whatever you're building into. So that way you avoid the cost of paying the $5 million most of the time.
Funny thing is, I don't think I played Empire Builder. I remember seeing the board and I remember being annoyed. What did North Carolina have? North Carolina had, I think, tobacco, but it didn't have pigs. North Carolina is a large hog farming state. A lot of people aren't proud of that, but you know, you take what you can get.
Yeah. I think they had Raleigh-Durham or something like that.
Yeah, or Charlotte. But I think they had tobacco and nothing else. And, like, somebody else had pigs, and I was just, no, North Carolina's the hog farmers. But, oh well, game design flaw, they're everywhere.
Which brings us to the commodities.
Yes, commodities.
Each city, or most of the cities, produce a commodity, or maybe 2 or 3 commodities. And the idea is to pick up commodities at a city and then drive along your rail, drop them off, and get money for delivering the commodity. And you do this by having, there are 3 load cards that you get. On each card, there's 3 demands that a city has. So some city might say, I'll pay $20 million for pigs.
Yeah, 3 different cities.
Yeah, 3 different
cities. Not 1 city with 3 demands.
And you have to pick one of those to deliver to get rid of that card. So you deliver that load, you get the payoff, discard the card, and draw a new one.
There are tricky little details with the game where, as Jim said, only two people can build into smaller cities. And if you have a game of four people and two people have already built into a smaller city where you need a commodity, then you need to take their train, or rather their rail. The game is not very take that at all. But no one can deny you their rail. So you use their rail, you pay them $4 per turn, you're on it, and then you can go into the city and do what you need to do. Sometimes if you do this too often, it will really push somebody over the top. I think I made some bad choices in Australia Rails sometime and gave you a big load of money.
Yeah, sometimes it's better just to bite the bullet and pay the cost. Unless, of course, you're blocked from the city and you can't get in there because there are already two or three people in there.
Right.
The way the game starts off is you have two or sometimes three turns of just building track. And you start with the first player. They have 20 million that they can spend to build track. And then the next player, and then the next player. And then you have what's called a switchback start. So if you had four players, you do 1, 2, 3, 4. And then you could go backwards, 4, 3, 2, 1. And this lets the last player have some advantage in building. In many cases, it's often nice to go last.
Yes, you get two building turns in a row.
And as I said, sometimes you can go three times, and you go 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 4, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then 1, 2, 3, 4 again. After that, you do your normal turn. You have your three demand cards. You place a train on some city. It doesn't have to be a major city, just some city. Usually a city that you want to pick up a load from. That's if you want to win the game.
You could just be like me, and I just draw a track, hoping that someday it'll pay off. Not a good strategy in your first turn.
No, not really. Yeah, you want to start off in a city that has a commodity that you want to pick up and then deliver. And then your turn basically goes, you move your train. You start off with a train that moves 9 spaces.
Very slow,
again, in most games. And then you have a chance to build more track. And you have 20 million that you can spend to build more track. Most of the time, you're just going to move your train. The other thing you can do is you can upgrade your train, which is you can get a faster train, which goes up 12, or you can get a bigger train. The basic train only holds 2 loads, bigger train holds 3. And I think, am I right, the cross grade? Can you do a cross grade and build track? So if you had like...
Yeah, if you can only spend 20 million per turn. There are some games that allow you to cross. What is it? If you're really fast, you can go to slower with 3.
Yeah, that's right.
So you can go. You can downgrade your speed, but upgrade your capacity. Basically, if you suddenly draw a card where it's very, very convenient to drop off 3 things, and you really want that heavier train, it only costs 10 million to go a little bit slower but carry 3 things. But you can spend that 10 and then spend 10 more to build.
Right.
So it's just 20 is your limit. Because in some games, like Lunar Rails, any upgrade is 10 million. Because the upgrade is a lot slower, Well, we'll get to that later.
Okay. We'll get to Lunar Rails.
Lunar Rails.
Oh, I have to read you a quote from the Wikipedia entry here. Your Rails is set in Europe. Many players consider this the best of the series.
No.
Okay. I'll read the descriptions later. And we'll do that again.
Okay.
I think that's about it for the game. Oh, there's the events, too.
Oh, yeah. Events. Those screw things up.
In the mixed in with the deck of demand cards or load cards, depending on how you want to call them, are events. So some events are like you have to pay a tax. Hey, it's like Monopoly. All right, it's nothing like Monopoly.
The tax card is really interesting because one of the things that you can do in the game, which Jim takes advantage of to great effect, is the fact that you don't have to show your money. So you can just keep your money in a little pile and put all the ones on top. And somebody may think, well, you may have 17 ones there. You could have 1 1 and 16 tens. or whatever, and once the tax card comes up, first everybody has to count their money, say how much they have, and then pay a tax if it's over $50 million. And from that point on, am I right? You're always allowed to ask somebody how much money they have.
Yes, you are. You are allowed to ask, which can be annoying if, as you say, you're trying to hide the amount of money you have. I always count my money under the table.
He's very stealthy.
Hey, it's part of winning the game.
Well, you win a lot more often than I do, so you must be doing something right.
There are other events that affect your rails. Like, oh, I forgot to mention rivers, didn't I?
Rivers, yes.
We've mentioned all the building through the grid. The terrain you're building across on the map also affects how much it costs to build. So, like an Empire Builder, there are rivers, like the Mississippi or the Missouri, and it costs you two extra to cross a river. In other games, there are sea spaces that you can cross, and it costs you three extra. Although, no one ever really does that.
Should we talk about fairies yet, or do you not want to talk about that since they're not in Empire Builder?
We'll talk about that in Euro Rails.
Okay.
Anyway, I wanted to mention the rivers because one of the common events is that rivers flood. And that knocks out all the bridges that cross that river, and you have to rebuild them. So it's usually a good strategy to keep a little bit of money around to rebuild your bridges, just in case the river floods.
Yeah, I've seen people lose because rivers flood and they don't have any money and they need to get across the river to get money and they can't afford to build their bridge. So they're done. And then they walk away from the table very angrily.
Well, then there are the people who have memorized all of the event cards that knock out the rivers.
Those people scare me.
And so they know that, okay, well, the river's already flooded. I don't need to worry about that.
Yeah, so they know that some river coming up is going to flood.
Well, we'll talk about the... The
crazy people?
Not the crazy people. They're very dedicated people.
They are quite dedicated.
They enjoy their rail games very much.
Boy, howdy.
And there are other events, derailments, which, let's say you lose a turn and you lose a load. So if you're carrying two loads of something, then you only lose one. But if you're only carrying one, then you have nothing left. So that leads to another strategy where you always carry two. If you go to a city to pick up, you know, you're picking up wine, for example, you'll pick up two of wine, or maybe you'll pick up wine and...
Cheese.
There you go. A very good combination.
Yes. Well, one thing I love about that is also you can, if you deliver a load and you're just carrying something, basically you're carrying the throwaway load in case you get a derailment, and you deliver that load and you still have your little throwaway on you, you have a chance to get a card that wants that throwaway. And if you happen to pick up something that's very out of the way, then you are extremely lucky and could have just $50 million handed to you. It doesn't happen often, but I've seen it happen more than once. And it's a very happy dance kind of day when it happens.
Well, it's often a good strategy if you know you're going to an out-of-the-way place, like picking up cork, for example. That's a very rare commodity in
your rails.
Pick up two.
Yeah.
Just in case another card comes up with cork. So that's pretty much the basic game. That's basically Empire Builder right there. Murr's going to talk a bit about the other games in the series. At least the games that we have, and I'll throw in some others after that.
Right. They just kept doing rail games, which is kind of funny, because on one hand you'd think, well, you've already got one, why do you need another one? But we do. We do need them. Then they did Euro Rails, which some people think is the best. I don't get it.
I think it's great.
No, it is great. It is great. It's not the best, though.
I disagree.
Anyway, Euro Rails brought in the idea of the ferries because you needed a way to get to England and you needed a way to get perhaps to Scandinavia without going into Eastern Europe.
Assuming you really wanted to go to Scandinavia.
We have never figured out a reason to go to Scandinavia because they don't have anything rare up there and it's just so difficult to get up there. But
well, they have fish and trees, but you can get fish and
trees.
You
can get fish and trees in other places.
Yeah, it's much easier places.
Yeah, it's not like cork or pigs, which, you know, it's worth it to go build to the other areas.
Yeah.
So ferries are really just flat out, they're annoying. You build into a ferry port, and here's how it changes. A ferry port has a little number on it The minute you build into a port, it doesn't cost the normal city cost. It costs however long the ferry is. So if the ferry's got a 6 on it, it costs 6. But you've built into the port and you've built to the opposite side. And then at that point, you can build out of the opposite port. When you're traveling on a ferry, your train moves 9 points. And so you go up there and you get there in 3. And you hit the ferry, you have to stop. You go across, but then you stop. And then, for a reason that we don't quite understand, perhaps the train is seasick, for the next turn, you go half speed. You really want to get to England, you hit your ferry, you go, your train moves 9, so you move 4 the next turn. The next turn, you can move your 9 again, go up to Newcastle, get your oil, cars.
I think cars.
Get your cars.
Not coal.
Come back down, and when you hit the ferry again, you go back to Europe, and then you have to move 4 again. I guess it's just to make it more difficult to get to where you're going, because the ferry should take time. That's what Eurorail's really introduced. Similar to Empire Builder, I believe you start out with 50 million, you have 2 building turns with a switchback, and the winning conditions are $250 million and you have to connect every city but one. And there are 8 major cities in Eurorails. And then they branched out to British Rails. The difference there is that you start with 60 million.
Actually, I have to correct you here. British Rails was actually first. It was before Eurorails.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, they redid it. They redesigned British Rails.
They did redesign it.
And it came out recently.
Yep.
Well, the redesign has you start with 60 million and you get 3 building turns, which is rare among the rail games. And because Britain has fewer large cities than, well, Europe, you have to connect all of the 4 major cities. And do you want me to go chronologically here?
No, I don't think you need to.
Because I don't know what they are chronologically.
That's fine. I'll just film the rest of them.
Basically, I just did it as the stack in our collection. And then there was Iron Dragon. And see, I like the idea of Iron Dragon because I am a sci-fi fantasy nut. Iron Dragon is where they have the train game in a make-believe world. It's the neighborhood of make-believe. It's a fantasy world where the commodities are things like spells, furs. No, there's fur in other games. But there's dragon attack event cards. There are potions. There are 2 cities that are linked magically, so if you link to one, you're automatically linked to another one.
You can deliver vampires instead of tourists.
Yes. But it got a little too detailed. Instead of regular building areas or regular building dots, mountains. Oh, wait, I forgot. Eurorails also introduced the Alps, which cost 5 to build through, which is really expensive. But Iron Dragon gave us plains, deserts, which you can have a desert storm, which can wipe out your track, forest, which cost 2 to move through, jungle, which cost 3 to move through, volcanoes, which are just like mountains, but if the volcanoes erupt, bad things happen, and the underground, which is like a shortcut. It also gave us the idea of foremen. You can choose a foreman, and whatever foreman you get will allow you to deal with one aspect of the game a little easier. For example, if you get the feline-type furry foreman, you can build through the jungle cheaper. Or you can get the, I believe, troll-type foreman that'll allow you to build through the underground. Building through the underground is really expensive. You have to pay to build into it, like a special one, and then you have to pay to pass through it.
Okay.
And it's extremely detailed, and we've found it to be quite unbalanced because more people have run out of money and sat floundering on their track looking confused in this game than any other rail game we've played. You run out of money and you don't expect to.
Right. There's also ships, too, right?
Ships, that's right. There are also dots in the ocean. So if you go to a port, you can just take a ship, you draw from the ship deck, and there are varying speeds and varying costs, and you can go to anywhere else on the coast to another port from your ship. It doesn't cost any more past the first cost of the ship.
I was actually reading a little further on this. There's an expansion to Iron Dragon.
Really?
I should point out that Iron Dragon was designed by Tom Wham, who also did Awful Green Things from Outer Space.
Oh, okay.
And Snitz Revenge and all of those. He has an expansion which he released 2 years ago at Origins, and you can still purchase from him. It's all the stuff that was cut out of the original game.
There was stuff cut out?
There was stuff cut out. So there was, like, you could hire mercenaries and lots of other things. I'm tempted to pick it up just to see what's in it, but I'm not sure. I don't know. As you say, it seems a little overdone already.
Well, I was hoping that the expansion might balance it a little better, if it just adds more stuff.
Well, it might. You never know.
Okay.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping it would balance the load cards out a little bit.
The best part about Iron Dragon is the fact, besides the, you know, the magical fantasy element, if that turns you on. But one thing that people, especially educators, love about the rail games is that they are geographically accurate. And they have, you know, all of the cities are correctly positioned, and it forces you to learn an awful lot about places you've never heard of. The thing is, Iron Dragon is it's a completely made-up place. And they have different countries. And just to make it easy on you, every single city has the same first letter as its country. So it's really easy to find the cities in Iron Dragon once you learn where the general, say, G section is.
Except that they have two B sections.
Okay, well, that's not very clean.
Yeah, it's not very friendly.
No. Okay. Then we have Russia Rails, which also you start with 60 million, two-turn switchback start. They introduce the marshland, which I believe costs 2 to build through, and winning conditions are 5 cities. We played that the other night.
Russian Rails also has the fall of communism.
That's right. Event cards have 2 different events on them.
Right, so before there's the communist event, and then there's the Republic of Russia event after the fall. And then you have to pay extra money to cross the borders of the ex-SSRs, like Ukraine and Kazakhstan.
You told me you have to pay extra to go back into Russia.
You're right. Go back into Russia.
Right. So it's free to go into the Ukraine, but it costs to go back into Russia.
Right. You have to pay the Russia tax.
Right. I'm leaving my favorite for last, of course. You've got Australia Rails, which also includes the desert milepost. And what's special about that is that there are 5 major cities in Australia Rails, but one of them is Perth, and Perth is on the west coast. And if you've ever seen a map of Sydney or Melbourne, you know that most of the large cities are on the east coast. So the winning condition for Australia Rails is you have to connect Perth and 3 other cities. So you just can't connect the 4 cities on the east and say, I won! You have to actually go all the way across to Perth. And then you have Nippon Rails, which introduced the tunnel, because Japan is a great number of islands. Many of the islands are just connected by ferry, but one of them, that of course I didn't write, it's Hikado to another city. But it cost 20 million to build the tunnel. And does everybody have to pay it, or if one person pays it, everyone can use it?
I think everyone can use it. I'm not really sure. I don't remember. It's been so long since we played that one.
Maybe you have to pay someone to go through their tunnel. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
And then lastly, we have Lunar Rails. Now, I waited for Lunar Rails for years. I heard about it several years ago, and it still took about 2 years after I heard about it to come out. Rail building on the moon. It is, of course, science fiction, because there are no cities or railroads on the moon. But they did take the craters and all the named places on the moon and gave them commodities and settlements.
Like robots and microchips.
Yes, robots and microchips, water, hydroponics, diamonds.
And wine.
And it being a very, yes, of course, everybody has to have wine and beer.
Oh, yeah, of course. Lunar grapes.
Oh, boy. And the interesting thing about Lunar Rails is that because it's the entire moon, you have the light side and you have the dark side. And the light side has more craters and the dark side has more mountains.
The dark side is mostly mountains.
Dark side is mostly mountains. But the dark side has the city with the robots on it, and that's my favorite city.
You just like the robots.
I like the robot. Hey, at Origins, I entered a Lunar Rails tournament, and I got blessed with 3 cards with 3 cities that needed robots. I made so much money on that turn. And you want to know the worst part is? I didn't come in first. I came in second. But dang it, I had the coolest game because I had 3 cards with robots. I was carrying a train full of robots.
Wow.
It was awesome. Anyway, so Lunar Rails brings in the fact that you have to connect 2 circles. So around the globe, or rather around each hemisphere, is a corresponding letter and number. So you've got A prime and B prime. And so you have to connect the A prime on the light side with the B prime on the dark side. And that's how you build from light to dark. And your first time playing, it can get a little confusing. I remember the first time I played, we were at Origins, and we had a couple of games going on, and one woman from one game came over to look at our table and say, "Okay, I just wanted to make sure that your map looked completely and utterly disorganized as ours does." And then she went back over happy, because just the crayons go everywhere, and it just looks like a big mess. But one of the reasons I like Lunar Rails is I think it's one of the best balanced games. As I said about Iron Dragon, you have problems with running out of money, and you're being stuck in the jungle, and you don't know what happened. With Lunar Rails, I just don't see that happening. For some reason, it just always seems to go smoothly. And it's not that everybody gets a bunch of money. It's not, like, too easy. But it's just very well balanced. It also brings up craters, where cities are built into craters, and you have to pay 1 extra to cross the crater. It has the Golden Spike Award, which is if you build track completely encircling the moon inside of what they call the Golden Spikes, which are 2 points in the north and 2 points in the south, and east and west too. You just have to circle the moon, and you can't go too far out of your way. And the first person to do that gets 20 million. And when you start thinking about how much it's going to cost to circle the moon, you'll wonder if it's worth it. I haven't seen many people do the Golden Spike, but, you know, sometimes when you're getting into the all the really expensive mountain building, you wonder if it's worth it. But it's there, the Golden Spike Award. And the events are a little different on the moon because you get meteor hits, and instead of just taking out 1 milepost, it'll take out that milepost and every milepost connected to it. So it takes out a big hex that looks like a full city. Every track connected to any of those dots is demolished. And then there are cosmic rays and solar rays, and you can't travel on the dark side or you can't travel on the light side. But essentially it's like a derailment where you lose 1 turn and 1 load. Oh, in Lunar Rails and Iron Dragon, there are a lot more trains than in all the other games. You start out with a 10-speed, like a 10-speed bike. And you can... 10 speed and 2 load, and eventually you can get up to 16 speed and 3 loads. And each upgrade is 10 instead of 20. It goes 10, 12, 14, 16, I think.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And then there's India Rails, which we don't own.
Right. Well, let me talk about some of the other ones that we don't actually own.
Okay.
Mur already mentioned India Rails. Actually, it's funny that I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry here, and it says, "It is considered by some to have the most balanced map."
Lunar Rails. Lunar Rails rocks!
We've actually only played it once. Our friend Garner owns it. But we need to have him bring it over so we can try it again. There was Agent of Change, which interests me because it is also known as West Virginia Rails. And it was published as a limited edition game to accompany the opening of a Huntington, West Virginia Museum of Art exhibition.
And why are you interested in West Virginia, dear?
Because my dad is from Huntington, West Virginia.
Okay.
And I would love to get a copy. But apparently, they're very rare and over $100, and perhaps I don't care that much.
If you know a way to get this Huntington, West Virginia Rails, please call us.
Agent of Change.
Huntington, West Virginia Rails. That sounds cooler. I'm sorry.
All right.
You've got Russia Rails, you've got Euro Rails, and you've got Huntington, West Virginia Rails.
Well, then there's Uncle Happy's Train Game.
Well, yeah.
Which just sounds just a little bit off.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's actually a kid's version. It's a kid's version of the game where you connect state to state. It actually has the lower 48 and you can actually connect to Hawaii and Alaska somehow. Not really sure. I'm sure Canada has a problem with that. And maybe
we can take the train to Hawaii?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the Trans-Pacific Ocean Tunnel.
That's awesome, man. That tunnel from Europe to, from England to France ain't got nothing on this.
Yeah, this is quite an engineering feat here. Or maybe it's a really big bridge. Or maybe they just put it on a boat.
Maybe it's just a big PVC pipe they just run the train into. And
there you go. They just floated across.
I'm not an engineer, by the way, in case you don't know.
Not a locomotive engineer.
I just like the crayons.
There was a modified version of Empire Builder called North American Rails, which added Mexico. And nowadays, if you buy Empire Builder, that's what you're going to get. You're going to get the version with Mexico, with a little bit of Canada. I think Canada should be insulted because Mexico actually gets Mexico City added, and Canada doesn't even get a major city.
And Canada has major cities, last I checked.
Yes, yes, one or two. Maybe three. No, don't write me. I like Canada. I'm from Buffalo. Canada's really cool.
We have very good friends from Canada.
Yes, yes. I've been to Quebec. It's a very nice city. Other than that, I think that's about it. There's China Rails, which is going to be coming out soon, which we didn't actually get to see, but they were showing at Origins this year.
I bet it looked like a big map of China with a bunch of dots.
You think?
And some major cities.
I don't think the fall of communism is on that
one. No. Probably not, unless the game designers are hopeful.
Unless they're hopeful.
So what's fun about this game, Jim? Besides the crayons.
Besides the crayons. I don't know. I like the aspect of just managing. I hate to say it's the resource managing, but
that's the resource managing.
That's what I like about it. I like the fact that you have, okay, I've got three cards here. I've got to figure out how to create a route which connects at least two of them in some financially
viable.
Yes, in some financially viable way. Something that actually pays off well and allows you to build track in an intelligent manner.
Yeah, it's one of those games where you got to balance what you do at the end, beginning of the game with what you do at the end of the game. Whereas at the beginning of the game, if you're spending $30 million to make 10, it might make sense because you're trying to expand all your track. Whereas at the end of the game, you want to get cards that you're probably already connected to a lot of stuff, and your goal is to make money because you want to get that $250 million. So you want to find cards that give you that where you don't have to spend any money or very little money to make your loads.
Which brings up a rule that we forgot to mention, which is that if you don't like any of your cards,
oh, right,
you can throw them all away, lose a turn, and get three new cards. Which is what people often do. If the cards don't match the routes that they've drawn, they'll just dump all three of them and draw three new cards in the hopes of getting at least two, maybe even just one card that matches what they already have.
There's a guy at Origins who's always in the Puffing Billy area. That's the train game area. And he is the one who consistently wins the Puffing Billy tournaments. And if you get on a tournament game with him, you know that you're going to lose. But he's awful nice and awful fun to play with. You just know he's going to kick your butt. And I remember I was playing in a game with him, and I saw him dump his cards twice in a row. And so I kind of looked at that as, okay, the master does it. It must be a good strategy from time to time. So.
Yeah, that guy is. That guy.
That guy.
Okay, yes, he is the master.
Yeah, he's great. Awesome. See him every year at Origins. Huh. He never leaves the Puffing Billy area.
Well, that's what he goes for.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the people who play the train games at Origins and, I guess, around at other conventions, that's why they go to those conventions, to play those games, often with the same other people who are going to those conventions to play those games.
Yep.
It's basically a big group of friends who just play games at the conventions.
And win trophies.
And win lots and lots of trophies. It is quite an experience to play these people at the games because they have the load cards memorized.
Oh, yeah.
They know the value of delivering pigs to
Seville.
Pigs.
Hey, we know the value of pigs to Seville.
Well, yes, but do we know the actual monetary value?
63?
All right, well, you win.
Well, I don't know if that's right. There are two huge loads in your rails. There's cork to cork, which is kind of cute.
Yeah, I think that was 65.
Okay. You get cork in Spain, and you have to go all the way up to Cork.
Ireland,
which requires two ferry trips, right?
Yes.
You can't go directly from Europe to Ireland. You have to go from Europe to England to Ireland.
Yep.
Or Europe to England to Wales to Ireland, but you don't have to take a ferry from England to Wales because there's no water separating them.
Much to the chagrin of Wales, I would say.
Yeah. See, here in my podcast, I'd go on a tangent about the ferries from Wales to Ireland, but we won't do that
here.
Oh, we can do that here.
Yes, when your train goes across the ferry.
Yes,
it gets very, very drunk.
We made the mistake of booking a trip to Dublin on Good Friday, which, you know, one of the reasons we wanted to go to Ireland was to sample the beers, and, well, they don't drink on Good Friday.
Well, we should say that the pubs are closed.
The pubs are closed, excuse me. The pubs are closed on Good Friday. So we had to...
They don't stop drinking.
We had the travel agent switch the day, so we got there on Thursday, and we were able to enjoy the pub scene on Thursday night. And then on Friday, we got up, left our hotel, went back to the ferry, got on the ferry, and realized that it was full of Irish people who were just taking the ferry so they could drink. It was 11 o'clock in the morning. The ferry was packed, and the bar was just completely crazy.
Yep. And that was with the bars being completely crazy the night before.
Oh, yeah.
People were getting the last drink in.
Yes. It was just fascinating.
Before the last drink of the next day, I guess.
Right. You'd just think there would be a run on the grocery stores or something. And said, oh, but of course the ferry ride was very nice. It was very casino-ish with movies and stuff.
Well, given the quality of the beer, I would say, the draft beer, I would say, the grocery store would not be the same quality.
Okay, good point. The draft beer was lovely.
Anyway.
So we did go on the tangent. Hooray.
There was the tangent. I'm trying to think of some other strategies that I use. Well, there's hiding the money.
Yeah.
don't let the other players know how much you have. That actually bit me in one of the Origins games I played because one guy, he...
Control freak.
He knew how much... He kept asking me how much money I had, and I, of course, had to tell him because the tax card had come up. He saw what kind of loads I was trying to get, and he basically cut me off and won the game, which really made me mad because I was pretty much winning the game up to that point. But,
yeah.
You know, tournament level play, I guess. Let's see, what other strategies... Dumping the loads, if you don't have it.
Oh, yeah, that's always fun, because we were... One game of Eurorail is just, you know, something happens in a game that just has you laughing hysterically, which is, you know, the picking up the second load to protect your first load. So I'd gone to London. Was it me? Or was it John?
I don't remember.
Whoever. I know John was there. Somebody had picked up a load, and picked up a load of tourists in London. And we're wandering around and got down into Eastern Europe, the forests of Eastern Europe. And decided at that point that they were going to pick up trees. So they just said, hey, tourist, you're getting out of here, Belgrade, enjoy. I'm picking up trees. And, you know, just imagining all those tourists just wandering around going, well, this isn't Seville. I don't know. It just seemed very funny to us.
And I must say, I'm guessing that Belgrade's a very nice town.
Oh, I'm sure it is. But you don't get a lot of cards saying, tourist to Belgrade.
No. In fact, I don't think there are any.
Right.
Sorry, Belgrade.
We should visit there someday.
We should.
With the magic of podcasting, you know you probably have one listener there. We're sorry.
I've been to Belgrade.
You really? That's right.
No, I've been to Budapest.
Oh, how was Budapest?
It was very nice. People there are very nice.
Okay.
Both in Buda and Pest. There's two parts to the city. There's Buda and there's Pest. Really?
I believe you!
It's true, the hilly part and the valley part.
I believe you!
Yes, folks, you get a little bit of history on this show, too.
Yes.
Say the magic word, win $100. Well, I think we're kind of running out of steam here.
Stop him before he talks again. Oh, boy. It's a very fun game. For those who don't like take that games, but like to be a little bit ruthless, you do get a sense of ruthlessness in the fact of You can take the best route from somewhere. You can block somebody out of a city. Although, there might be a rule that you can't build into a small city unless you have to. Isn't there?
I think that's in the honeymoon rules.
Okay.
The two-player version.
Yeah, there's the honeymoon rules are weird.
Yeah, there's the two-player version. It's one player can build into a small city, and the two players can build into the medium city. But you can't build into the small city unless you have either a pickup there or a delivery. So that way you can't screw somebody out of it. You're the other player, obviously.
Right. But I recommend Lunar Rails. Lunar Rails are awesome.
Well, I recommend Euro Rails. So, if you want to try this out without actually buying the game, no offense to Mayfair, there are some computer versions out there.
But they don't have crayons.
They don't have crayons. There's a version of Iron Dragon out there, which actually does cost money. I think you can download a demo, though, just to try it out. There's another, which I think is done through a crayon game society, called EB Rails. And that comes with the basic original Empire Builder map of just the 48 contiguous states and a bit of Canada. And you can get other maps for it as well, but you have to pay money for those. That's also a demo, and again, you have to pay money to get the full version. And then there's a game called Rails, which is developed by a guy under the moniker Pluto Scarab Software. And that one's actually free. It doesn't have quite the same rules as all of the Mayfair Rails games, but it's a pretty good approximation. And it can generate random maps. So you can just say, generate a map for me. It'll throw commodities on all the spaces, generate, I think, 5 or 6 major cities, and then you just connect them up. And you can play against up to 3, maybe? Maybe you can play against 5 computer players.
One thing those rail games do is they, like it or not, they do teach you about geography. I remember I had a listener from Australia message me, and I asked him where he was from, and he's like, oh, you haven't heard of it. It's a little city called Perth. I'm like, I know where Perth is. It's on the western coast. Because I'd played Australia Rails.
Yeah, and when we first heard that the Winter Olympics were going to be in Turin, I'm like, oh, yeah, Torino. They make cars there.
There are cars there, yes. And then you can look like a big geek in front of your friends, but you know, if you're
especially because you're laughing to yourself and they don't know why.
Yes, but if you're a gamer, you're used to it.
John O'Brien thought it was funny.
Yes, I thought it was funny.
So I guess anything else you got to say, Mer?
I don't think so. Lunar Rails rocks.
And your Rails rocks. So
no, Lunar Rails.
Get them both.
All right, fine.
So that's about it for now. Thank you for listening. And I'll be back in just a little bit with some comments on next week's show.
Thanks for having me on the show, Jim.
Oh, you are welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Yay.
This is James Ernest of Cheap Ass Games, and you're listening to The Vintage Gamer.
And there you go. Thanks again to Murr for helping out with that. It is one of our favorite games to play together. And relationships should always have a healthy dose of disagreement, don't you think? Well, I'm actually going to skip feedback again this week. The show, again, is a bit too long for it, and I honestly haven't had the time to collate it together. But I have been trying to respond to emails and comments on the website. If I've missed you, just poke me again, and I'll get back to you. All of it, whether I've responded or not, is greatly appreciated, and whether the comments are positive or negative. And seriously, on the negative point, if you have suggestions on how to make the show better, do let me know. I'm always trying to improve the show and try to make it just a little bit better each week. But I do ask that you make it constructive, please. So, if you have feedback for The Vintage Gamer on this show or any other, you can leave comments on the website, which is www.thevintagegamer.net. Or you can contact me directly via email at vintagejim@gmail.com or via Skype. My username there is JVSquare. And as I always say, feedback is always welcome. And thus concludes yet another steam-driven episode of The Vintage Gamer. Our theme is performed by the trio Music of the Spheres and available on the album of the same name at magnatune.com. Your humble host is Jim Van Verth. The next episode of The Vintage Gamer will probably be about the abstract game Pente. Until then, keep trying those new games, but don't forget to play the old ones. Thanks for listening.